Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We're back, 1320 WILS. Michael Cohen, thank you for joining us. Well, it's long been known that smoking is bad for your health, but now a new study finding that lying can impact your health negatively. That's the research. That's this wild research also finds that Americans average about 11 lies a week. To talk about her study, I'm joined by the lead author, Anita Kelly, a psychology professor at the University of Notre Dame. Anita, thank you so much for joining us on WILS.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So when you're going about studying lying, how do you know the participants aren't lying to you?
Well, we have each week when they come in across the 10 weeks, we have them hooked up to a lie detector test, or a real one.
Wow, now that's intense. So you were actually hooking them up to a lie detector test, and the lying, was it, were you asking personal questions about lying in their personal life?
Yes. So each week when they came in, we would ask them how many lies had they told in the previous week. We'd ask them how many major lies and how many white lies.
And how often would you catch them trying to lie as you were asking them these questions?
Well, you know what? It's not very often, because even though people tend to know that you can't submit these lie detector tests to a jury in a courtroom situation, when people are actually hooked up to a real polygraph test, they actually do respect the test. And the first time we test them, we show them their recordings on the computer screen, and they see that corresponds to them personally. So we don't lie to them about that. So people are very forthcoming when they're actually hooked up to a polygraph test.
So the connection between lying and your health, what exactly is it?
The way it worked out in our study, so we had 110 participants, and we had each one coming in across 10 weeks. And one of the groups was asked not to tell any lies at all, no white lies and no major lies across the 10 weeks. And then we had a control group that was given no special instructions about lying, and then everybody came in each week across the 10 weeks. And the kind of relationship we saw was that in a given week, when a participant from the no-lie group told, let's say, three fewer white lies that week, that person also reported, on average, 4.3 fewer mental health complaints, such as feeling blue, having trouble falling asleep, feeling anxious. And the control group reported a drop in mental health complaints when they had told three fewer white lies that week as compared to how many they told in other weeks of the study, but they had two fewer mental health complaints that week.
Hmm.
So what we did, we found across all 110 participants, there was a clear connection between a given week when that person had lied less, that person had reported better physical and psychological health, but that the relationship was stronger for the participants that we had asked not to lie.
Now, you say white lies. Was that the focus? I mean, these kind of almost polite lies that many, many people do?
Yes. Oh, yes. We told them specifically, in the people in the no lie group, which ended up being about half our participants, we told them you can't lie at all. If, for example, you're girlfriend comes home and she's got a new haircut and you don't like it, and she says, how do you like it? You can't say that you like it, because that's a stated falsehood with the intention to deceive her. So even white lies like that, we told participants none of that.
Mm-hmm.
We asked them to do none of that.
I'm talking to Anita Kelly, a psychology professor at the University of Notre Dame, about her study into lying and its connection to our health. Are we to extrapolate that a major lie or maintaining some kind of major falsehood is even worse for your health?
Actually, the pattern was similar for white lies and major lies. And you know what? I have an explanation for that. The only reason I ask people about major and white lies is because I figured that other people would care about that distinction. But in my theorizing, even white lies are problematic because they undermine trust in a relationship. So, for example, if you hear your spouse telling her mom that she has to get off the phone because dinner's starting, and you know darn well she has plenty of time to talk because dinner is not starting, and that's just a little white lie. But then you wonder, how much will she be lying to me when she needs to have a convenient lie? And so because both white lies and major lies can undermine trust and therefore undermine relationships and then health, that's why I'm arguing that white lies are so bad too. And actually the data supported that. So the pattern of results did not look different for white lies as compared to major lies, to answer your question.
Well, it's very interesting because the temptation is to have white lies to avoid conflict, which some might guess that conflict would maybe be even more stressful in some cases.
You mean if you tell the truth sometimes, it's going to be more stressful?
Yes, sir.
Well, what was fascinating about the study is I asked people at the end, what did you do to avoid lying across this 10 weeks? And people weren't saying that they were telling others now the brutal truths, like I hate the haircut, for example, getting back to the haircut example. They were finding ways to tell partial truths and to avoid answering questions that could cause conflict or to be vague or general in their answer.
Hmm.
So, for example, someone might say, I've seen your hair looking even more beautiful, even better on other occasions, to kind of subtly say that the haircut is not so great, but not to demean the person.
I wonder when we talk about lying, there's, of course, one of the most difficult things is when people lie to themselves. They're in a state of denial. I'm guessing this study didn't really kind of broach that very difficult topic in terms of the stress that causes, does it?
Well, actually, in this, you're right. The study did not directly try to get at that. But it was fascinating to see what people wrote about their efforts not to lie. So they would say they just realized that they were making excuses for things that they didn't have to make excuses for, and that they could stop exaggerating their daily accomplishments. Like if they had gotten 3 important things done instead of saying it was 5, or like let's say they had run a 7-mile run instead of saying they ran 10 miles, they could just say, I ran 7 miles tonight. And so I think that shows some kind of insight into their previous level of self-deception, kind of exaggerating accomplishments to make themselves look good. I think part of that is self-deception, and the participants in our study had insights into that and reported that they had stopped doing that.
But bottom line, you're saying is it's not just the act of lying that is stressful and potentially impactful on health. It's what it does to how you feel about other people interacting with you, and you begin to question what their potential to lie is also.
Well, yes, I mean, it probably does work both ways. I mean, what the data we found, the observations we made were that lying less in a given week was also, it also corresponded with participants' reports of better relationships in that week. And the link between less lying and better health could be, to some extent, explained by the improvement in their relationships as a function of lying less.
Well, it is interesting because some people would consider omitting information as a form of lying sometimes. But you're saying that's an approach some people took in this study. They actually decided to not say something rather than provide a white lie.
Well, I need to explain that because we actually did tell them, you are welcome to participate in the study. We're asking you to tell no falsehoods for the duration of the study. And we told them you can feel free to omit truths, refuse to answer questions, and keep secrets, but you cannot say anything you know to be false. So we were very clear about that. And the reason I did it that way is because keeping a secret is less detrimental. I predict that it would be, on average, less detrimental to a relationship because at least the person who keeps the secret from you can still be trusted, perhaps, to tell the truth if you ask that person a direct question.
Hmm.
Whereas if you hear a flat-out lie, then now you can never know if you can trust what's coming out of the other person's mouth. So I think there's an important distinction between flat-out lies where someone says something that he or she knows to be false in order to mislead the other person versus omitting some detail. I think they are very different.
Fascinating stuff. Anita Kelly, psychology professor at the University of Notre Dame, talking about her study into lying and your health. Anita, thank you so much for joining us on WILS.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back to wrap things up. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.